a lot of research is done and looking at a lot of reports. And, you know, when you read that gap report, it's pretty staggering. You look at every state, there's just massive shortfalls with units anywhere from VLI, you know, very low income units, all the way down to the 30% units, which are considered extremely low income units. And it's just a massive shortfall. And it seems like they never end up catching up. Every year it seems to be growing slowly, but it's still growing.
Welcome to Buzz House, a Baker Tilly podcast where you can hear all the buzz around multifamily housing with all the info you need to help you win now and anticipate tomorrow. Hi, I'm Don Bernards, the partner in charge of Baker Tilly's multifamily housing practice.
And I'm Gary Gibson, a partner at Baker Tilly, also specializing in consulting on multifamily housing transactions across the country.
Let's get started. For this episode of The Buzz House, Garrick and I want to catch up on a lot of industry news from the early spring, covering things such as the president's budget, various newly issued reports, 2024 rents, and the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, among other topics. So just a lot of news that we just want to spend a few minutes on and share with you, get some discussion going. And with that, I turn over to Garrick to kick things off. Garrick?
All right. Thanks, Don. Yeah, I'm excited about this podcast. Just you and I, it hasn't been that way for a while. So I'll go ahead and start off. The White House has actually laid out its housing policy for fiscal year 2025. Many of these items are very preliminary and may not go far legislatively, but it gives us a view of what's on the administration's mind around housing. Over the next 10 years, these provisions could produce, if enacted, over 1.2 million new units. The first couple of items are on single-family home ownership, including middle-class first-time homeowner credit, equaling to $10,000, down payment assistance for first-generation homeowners. HUD last year already reduced mortgage insurance premiums to an estimated 850,000 home buyers at $800 per year. Then there's the Neighborhood Homes Tax Credit. It would be the first tax provision to build or renovate affordable homes and would lead to 400,000 starter homes across the country. The next major tool would be the Innovation Fund of $20 billion. It would incentivize communities to remove unnecessary barriers to affordable housing and provide funding to support the construction of affordable units. A big item that we are seeing right now are the federal home loan banks doubling the actual amount of their annual contribution to the AHP or affordable housing programs. So, you know, that's kind of a sort of a summary of what we saw.
Garrick, and very interesting on AHP, you know, just a couple off the top of my head, you know, Dallas up to $2 million per award, Chicago up to $2 million per award, Des Moines up to $3 million per award. So again, with the around 10 federal home loan bank regions, definitely pay attention to what's available for your projects. And then as Garrick noted, with all those items in that fiscal year 25 budget, again, increasing the loan housing tax credit, the 9% credit is out there. And again, the 50% tax reduction to 25 or 30% is out there too. So a lot that Garrick and I will keep our eyes on legislatively over here the next 6 months, next 12 months, and so forth. Garrick?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I like to also talk a little bit about historics too. The National Park Service came out with a report entitled Federal Incentives for Rehabilitating Historic Buildings, noting that for its fiscal year ended September 30th, 2023, recorded amount of qualified rehab expenditures or QREs for projects receiving their Part 3 during the year. The report notes there were actually $8.81 billion of rehab costs in these historic buildings. It was only the second time QREs passed $7 billion. That's a lot of activity there. The report also notes in the history of the program since 1976, more than $131 billion of private investment has gone to these historic projects. It's a relatively small industry, but there's a lot of capital going into the historic program for sure. Also, there are a lot of multifamily projects completed with 12,684 units placed in service, which is the highest since 2016. And finally, New York, Illinois, and Pennsylvania had the top three amount of QREs for projects receiving Part 3s in 2023. A lot of historic buildings being done. I've worked on several projects in those actually locations over the last several years, so it's good to hear. And one more actually thing, actually. Of the 970 Part 3 certified projects, 46% were for less than $1 million of QREs, and 14% were less than $250,000. So we're always talking about these deals are just unfeasibly hard to put in an actual in federal investor because they have to be in the partnership structure here. So there is language proposed in the Historic Tax Credit Growth and Opportunity Act of 2023, which would boost the HTC program from 20 to 30% for projects of less than $3.75 million. What I would like to see actually is maybe if they would change it where if it's below a certain amount, it could just be monetized the way some of the new IRA credits are. That would be awesome.
Yep. That makes a lot of sense, Garrett. Right. It's hard to sell those smaller credits cash. Like you said, like the solar credit option would be fantastic, wouldn't it? So
yeah, that would be great.
Very good. Garrett, I'm going to switch to a report that you and I many times reference. I know we do research in it. It's put out annually by the National Low-Income Housing Council's that organization. It's entitled The Gap, A Shortage of Affordable Homes, really looking again at the inventory or their lack, therefore, of houses. This year's report finds that, again, the lowest income renters in the U.S. face a shortage of 7.3 million affordable and available rental homes. As a result of the shortage, nearly three quarters of renters with extremely low incomes are severely cost burdened. Severely cost burdened, meaning people are paying more than 50% of their income on rent. That's obviously a staggering amount of people and a large percentage of their income. This group of renters, so you might say very low-income renters, what is that as a population compared to the total rental population? That's about 25% of total renters. There's about 45 million renters in the United States today. About 11 million of them are very extremely low-income renters or persons. The report, in general, calls for greater federal investments in the preservation and expansion of the affordable housing stock, namely more housing choice vouchers to bridge the gap between renters' income and rents, and also emergency rental assistance for renters who experience unexpected short-term financial shocks that kind of run out of money and maybe facing homelessness. Just kind of related statistics that, again, only 34 affordable and available rental homes exist for every 100 extremely low renter households. The report, of course, goes on and on, but in short, no major metropolitan city, no state has enough units. And the report, again, it's The Gap, A Shortage of Affordable Homes by the National Low-Income Housing Council, has this level of detail that you can go in and look for yourself. So, Garrett, no surprise there. The numbers only, unfortunately, increase every year.
Yeah, I mean, we're sort of wrapping up the Capital Magnet Fund round. And with that, a lot of research is done and looking at a lot of reports. And, you know, when you read that Gap report, it's pretty staggering. You look at every state, there's just massive shortfalls with units anywhere, from VLI, very low-income units, all the way down to the 30% units, which are considered extremely low-income units. And it's just a massive shortfall, and it seems like they never end up catching up. Every year, it seems to be growing slowly, but it's still growing.
And I think unfortunately, we'll fall behind, right, Garrett, because we see the gaps in our financial models between, and we know market rate units aren't going on right now because of where interest rates and construction costs are. We know there's bigger gaps to fill in affordable. So it feels like when we look back 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we're going to have this low number of units produced, which is only going to add to, unfortunately, the shortage. So,
and high construction costs and inflationary periods with these rates didn't really help either.
Yep. Very good. Now, just briefly, many of you probably have already seen this, that it always comes to an end at some point. U.S. Housing and Urban Development Secretary Marcia Fudge announced her retirement. Her last day was March 22nd here in 2024. During her tenure at HUD, Secretary Fudge worked to address housing inequality, homelessness, and the racial wealth gap in homeownership, while also tackling a range of other housing issues affecting low-income families and communities across the country. As of this recording, there is not a replacement, but we'll keep our eyes on that as well. So, Garrett?
We almost forgot, right? The United States Tax Court ruling. They ruled in February 20 that the decision that a taxpayer was correct to include bond issuance costs on an eligible basis for a 4% low-income housing tax credit property in New York City. So that decision ran counter to more than two decades of practice that followed IRS guidance from as far back as 2000 that said including such costs was disallowed. So I would imagine because of that, you're probably going to see a lot of underwriting models start to add some of the cost of issuance and basis, and we'll keep you posted if we have any new developments on that. In addition to, we did receive an IRS notice 2024-2025, right, which officially advising states on resident population figures needed to determine the state's 2024 private activity bond volume cap and population-based component of the housing credit ceiling, right? So volume cap is a greater of $125 per capita or about $378 million. And the 9% credit is the greater of 2.9 per capita or $3,360,000.
Yeah, it's good to see those dollars go up with inflation or the trend that it does. Again, there's proposed bills to increase the 9% credits by another 12.5%. I've seen bills out there to increase rather from $2.90 to $4 and some cents. So as statistics show, we definitely need the resources. With that, many of you saw here in the month of April, recently the Department of Housing and Urban Development released the 2024 income limits. Many of you wait for those income limits to come out for deals that are maybe in the closing process, maybe deals you're underwriting right now. As of April 2024, the annual cap for increases to income limits and maximum rents for HUD-assisted and housing credit properties will now be set at 10%. So that is the maximum a rent could go up under the formula. These limits comport with HUD's announcement in January of a new method for calculating the annual maximum cap on increases in income limits and, again, maximum rents for HUD-assisted and housing credit properties. HUD routinely implements caps on these amounts, but until this year, the cap was determined as the greater of 5% or the double the change in the national median income. The 10% cap is lower than the previously estimated almost 14.5-15% cap. Finally, for 2024, the average change across HUD areas, which can encompass multiple counties, was calculated nationwide at a 5.5% increase. So again, a pretty significant increase, 5.5%. Again, not anyone tracked could be more than 10% for the year. So, Garrick, I know people kind of need those rent boosts and they're underwriting many times to, you know, keep a deal feasible with where you just mentioned construction costs, interest rates are at.
Yeah, and I think it was people were a little bit taken back because they were expecting to maintain that increase without this sort of increased cap, but it is what it is. Projects are still getting done. I think it was just something that a lot of people were not expecting, and it did create the scenario where we had to go through and re-underwrite some projects and get a little bit more creative.
Perfect. I got one more myself, Antonio Garrett, one more item. So my last item I want to touch on is more around those involved in public housing. In March, President Biden signed into law the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2024 for the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development. The appropriation bill includes several updates to the Rental Assistance Demonstration or RAD program. I think a lot of people are watching this, right? The previous legislation around the RAD program had set the deadline for PHAs to apply for participation in the RAD program as of September 30th, 2024. So that was kind of coming near later this year. The change in this appropriations bill pushes that date out to 2029, so 5 more years to apply for RAD. It still may be subject to caps and so forth, but as we have not reached the cap of allowable units, that was a welcome sight. Additionally, under this appropriation bill, a little quick background, HUD has allowed and recent years encouraged PHAs to combine RAD program with Section 18. The so-called RAD Section 18 blends, of course, facilitate public housing and redevelopment by boosting the revenue available to PHAs by having the rents of the Section 18 will be higher rents than the RAD units. However, these two methods of removing units from the public housing program have had different rules. And up to now, the RAD units and the Section 18 units were covered by separate Section 8 contracts, for instance, with slightly different provisions and requirements. This resulted in sometimes cumbersome requirements and added to the challenge of operating and overseeing these properties after conversion. Updates in this appropriations bill should make the use of using these two public housing repositioning tools work more smoothly. So again, in your RAD Section 18 blend, first, PHAs can now convert RAD Section 18 blends to one RAD Section 18 contract instead of two separate ones, meaning that the Section 18 units can be included in the RAD Section 8 contract subject to the same requirements as the RAD units. Secondly, the tenant protection voucher assistance generated by Section 18 units can now convert to either project-based rental assistance, PBRA, or project-based vouchers, PBV. Previously, the Section 18 units converted through a RAD Section 18 blend could only receive PBV assistance. So both welcome updates on this appropriations bill. Again, that extension, I think a lot of people are wondering what's going to happen. We didn't think the RAD program was going away, but it was good to see that extension. And then again, as I think a lot of people give credit to HUD, throughout the history of the RAD program, now over 10 years in existence, is there's always been these updates, these revisions, these components to just help make the process a bit smoother. And this, you know, it's not more money to the program, but again, it helps make operations smoother.
Efficiency is always welcome. And speaking of efficiency, you know, within the energy program, right, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency recently announced $20 billion in grant awards for two categories in the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund. This was created by the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. These three organizations will receive a combination of $14 billion in grants under the National Clean Investment Fund, and five organizations will receive a combination of $6 billion in grants from the Clean Communities Investment Accelerator. The National Clean Investment Fund winners will use the funding to establish hubs to provide funding and technical assistance to community lenders working in low-income communities, providing pathways to deploy projects in the communities while building capacity of community lenders to financial projects. The Clean Communities Investment Accelerator awardees will create a national clean financing network for clean energy and climate solutions across sectors. The EPA said that $14 billion of the capital will go toward low-income and disadvantaged communities. So that's good news, right? So we will pass along more information as we know it on the $20 billion of this funding. I know you had, you know, some experience with that recently, Don.
Yeah, we're very excited to see that. We've talked with some of our energy colleagues. Not all this is for housing, but again, because $14 billion will go towards low-income and disadvantaged communities, as you noted, we think there'll be a lot of opportunities for affordable housing properties. It might come in subordinate low interest rate debt. It could potentially be blended with first mortgage financing. So as Garrick said, we're going to stay on top of this. $20 billion with a B. It's good to see that kind of money out there. It's going to go fast, but I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities for affordable multifamily to pursue this financing. So that was a lot of information. You know, reach out to us at any time. There's a lot of things we're going to follow, Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, always what's going on in policy. It was neat to see the, like you said, Garrick, a lot of activity in the historic, right? We sometimes don't see it, but yeah, like you said, there's billions of dollars of QREs out there. That's it for this episode of The Buzz House, catching up on various industry news. Once again, I'm Don Bernards.
And I'm Garrick Gibson. And just to highlight what one of my colleagues said, let's stay alive to 2025. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. For additional resources around multifamily housing, check out BakerTilly.com. If you have a suggestion for the show, email us at buildabakertilly.com. That's build@bakertilly.com. See you next time on Buzz House.